It's Saturday, November 6, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and your questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor. Share and share alike. You're welcome to reuse our content for pretty much anything you'd like, as long as you share your content and give us a little bit of attribution. Today's theme song is from Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. Thank you, Michael, for the theme song. If you'd like to participate by creating a theme song for Geek Speak, we'd love to have your additions to the show. Of course, we also take imagery for our website. You can learn about that at geekspeak.org. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam, and he's a software engineer, our programmer, political junkie. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy and Stanford instructor part-time.
Hey there.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
And, of course, the lovely Al Luckow, new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everyone.
So lovely.
Yes.
We'll start out the new segment with Miles. He's got a great story from the EU. But first, I want to mention that to join the car guys, click and clack the Tappet Brothers for their advice on things automotive and just about everything else on Car Talk every Saturday at 11 a.m. and again on Sunday at 9, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. All right, let's go ahead and start with Al. You got a great story about someone's birthday.
Yeah. I'm sure I've mentioned Asimo before.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Honda robot that has had an evolution. It's turning 10. And it went from having a big cable into its back that was just totally awkward and weird and everything. And now it's like, you know, doesn't have any cables, can walk around. It's white. It's got a big helmet on.
We've seen this thing fall downstairs.
Yeah,
right?
Actually, I'm going to post the. I of course have to post the video of this thing falling down the stairs in front of the audience. I call it "Don't make an Asimo of yourself," and I think it's worth watching. But right. it is Asimo's birthday. And
how old?
10.
Wow.
And great. I think it's only appropriate that we sing Asimo an appropriate birthday.
You really think so? Because I want to get to the story of Miles from the EU. But yeah, okay, let's sing it.
Do you want
to sing
a
happy birthday
to
you?
Okay. Ready?
One. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Asimo. Happy birthday to you.
And I hope you
and many
that.
More
on Channel 4.
Who will understand that?
I hope you appreciate that. Definitely.
Can we say a couple more things than that?
We could have done it in binary, too.
Can we say, we are the Borg? We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. That'd be great.
Can we just do it in clicks? Some kind of clicking?
That was a happy birthday.
I knew the 4-4 harmony would work.
No, we're just all out of tune.
It's amazing.
Man. Happy birthday, Asimo.
All right, Ben, what's going on in space?
So I've got some good news and I got some bad news. Good news first or bad news first?
Bad news first.
Bad news first. Okay. So the Space Shuttle Discovery, and as many of us know, the shuttles are going to stop going up pretty soon. We've only got a couple launches left. And this one is Discovery's last launch. Discovery's one of the space shuttles. And it's been delayed and delayed and delayed again for a number of different issues, electrical issues, weather issues. And it just got delayed again. And that's kind of
what's
a bummer.
Up? Is it really complicated or something? I mean, this isn't rocket science. Oh, wait.
it kind of is. Shuttle science. They had to cancel the launch yesterday because they discovered a hydrogen gas link at the ground umbilical carrier plate, or GUCB. I wonder, like, how many pieces go into the shuttle and how, like, is there someone on this planet who knows all the names of every single thing in the shuttle? I mean, there's got to be, right?
No.
I'm sure there's millions of pieces.
Some guy drafted it up on a napkin and then they built it.
Come on, the folks at NASA aren't rocket scientists.
Ben, your perspective on how complicated this is grossly underrated, I think.
It keeps waffling. No, it's really complex. It's just it's a napkin.
It's basic. Basic physics. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the bad news is that it's delayed until at least November 13th.
That's not that bad news. What's the good news?
Well, wait, that is bad news. Because if they have to scrub December 30th or November 30th, excuse me, then they have to push it back until next year, which is when we're supposed to not be launching shuttles.
Oh.
And Obama gave the go-ahead, I think, for one more shuttle, which means that we'll have to bump that shuttle that's next year into further into next year. So it's just kind of like pushing back a bunch of stuff that's not supposed to be pushed back.
Gotcha.
But the good news is that now we have skin-tight bodysuits for astronauts to keep their bones intact. And this actually...
This sounds kind of important.
This is geek speak. I found this really interesting. Like, what do superhero-style spacesuits have to do with keeping astronauts healthy? Well, it turns out what they do is they make these spandex-like suits, and they make them too small for the astronauts vertically, right? So they have to really squeeze into these things.
So it's a good thing that astronauts are in really good shape.
Yeah, exactly, because, yeah, they all look good. So that actually helps by compressing their bodies in that vertical direction so their bones don't lose bone mass when they're in space, because when you're in space, you're in zero gravity. You don't have the gravity to pull down and compress their bones.
Right.
Yeah, and so you lose bone mass at actually a pretty alarming rate, which means that if we wanted to go to Mars or something like that, there's no way. You know, we'd all be really unhappy by the time we got there. It kind of looks like a Spider-Man suit. It's it doesn't have the Spider-Man lines. It just looks like a spandex suit.
I kind of call foul on you, though, Ben. You covered two stories in one headline.
Well, I said good news and bad news.
With all that.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. We can't bring these spacesuits up into space with a shuttle because the shuttles are going
away. Are they actually going to try them out?
Well, they've tried it. There's the affectionately known as the Vomit Comet, the airplane that goes and flies a parabolic arc to simulate zero G, a free fall, for like, what, 20-some seconds or something like that. It's how they filmed Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks. They were testing them out, and they say that they're actually pretty good so
Ready
far.
Ready to try, as long as they can get the shuttle.
They need more compression in the legs and less in the, yeah.
Thank you very much, Ben, for that story. I almost forgot to get to Miles. Miles, hi.
Hi.
What's going on in the EU?
The European Union is proposing a law to be forgotten online if the user so chooses.
Kind of like you. Just a few minutes ago.
Yeah. You got a right online to be forgotten.
No. Singing episode.
So what's going on is there is a concern. The European Union has always been pushing privacy rights far more strongly than the U.S. has. But this one goes a step further and says not only do you have a right to privacy, but after you go to a site, after you've been there for a while, and they were looking very much at Google and Facebook when they were drafting this legislation, that if you decide you don't want to be on Google anymore, don't want to be on Facebook, or don't want to be on any of the dating sites or something like that, that the user should have a right to tell that company, okay, now delete all of my data. Not only do I not want to have it displayed, but I don't want you to have the data at all.
Anywhere.
Anywhere.
No backups, no storage, anything like that.
Means going back to the database and saying delete all.
Okay, so as a programmer, that sounds extremely hard to do. Like, you have to design your system to do that. By default, you have backups all the time, archiving.
Right.
So how are they proposing to actually execute that? Do the companies have
backups
duration?
In general, backups
get erased over a period of time.
Yeah, you're reusing the same backup media and things like that.
Right, but you normally keep your backups for a while at least, a month, say. Depends on what you're doing. So do you know the law well enough to state that within X amount of days, all the data will be erased from this company?
It is still not law. Uh-huh. In fact, the legislation hasn't even been put up for a vote yet.
Okay,
this is something that's in the pipeline.
Great.
And so there aren't that many details that I can bring forth right now. At the same time, it's something that, because it's in the pipeline, people will know about it. But you are correct that it becomes that issue of if the user says, I want all of my data destroyed, how quick can that happen?
Right. Well, exactly. How quick will it happen? But also, how safe is it? And what's your data versus other people's data? Take Facebook for an example. Let's say I write a post about USB, crazy USB devices, and then Al, you know, adds a couple comments, and then I add a couple comments, and together that makes an entire kind of experience. With Al erasing his comments, mine are meaningless.
It just looks like you're crazy,
which I probably am. But so how? I mean, is it if you wrote it, you own it? Doesn't matter if you're doing it with other people. I mean, it depends.
I believe that's the stance that's being taken by the EU. It's not necessarily the stance that's taken by U.S. companies. Many companies, when you sign up, they have that privacy policy.
Well, then this kind of thing would be very difficult. This kind of thing would be very difficult for collaborative documents. You know, kind of a wiki style document where you really only have diffs between users, and to actually edit it, you break it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Does anyone else know what I'm saying?
Well, if we knew the other half of the conversation that's been deleted, we would understand what you're saying.
That's a perfect example.
And these are for public services that I see right now. I don't know what its effect would be on a private corporation, because that would have to be an exemption put in there, because then it becomes, you need to delete all of my data. But you're a programmer, and you've written Bugzilla reports and code. Like, that doesn't...
Well, that's an interesting problem, isn't it? I mean...
For that matter, if you're a writer, like all of the Word documents that you produced, and those are assumed to be property of the company.
The right to
in
be
the
forgotten.
US,
it's a really interesting idea.
Something to keep in mind, and it's something not taking a position on this one way or another. Mm-hmm. Actually, there are pros and cons.
Oh, come
of
on!
This.
Let's get an opinion.
No, on the contrary, we've already talked about many of the potential cons.
Yeah,
and at the same time, this is going to be an argument that we're going to have in the U.S. in 5 years, in 10 years.
Can't we just talk? Can we talk about it kind of from a theoretical perspective? Is it really possible to erase information?
Sure.
How? I mean, from a physics perspective, it's not. You don't erase information, right?
Well, if you're scattering bits, you get
what I'm saying.
Essentially,
I mean,
deleting data.
If you put something on a site and then have other users reading it. And then you have an experience.
Oh, you're talking
you
about things like
it.
archive.org.
There's archive.org. There's personal computers caches. You know, if I viewed a website and then I shut that machine down for a while and I don't do anything for a long time, it's actually still on that hard drive. It's actually on the hard drive probably for quite a while. So this idea of the data being gone it's hard to say.
Yeah, are we running into the problem of peeing in the pool?
Right. Like, and we talk about this great copyright concept that if you stream something, you're not really getting a copy of it, but that's not really how it works. You actually do get a copy. I mean, copies are made all the time. That's the age that we're in. Mm-hmm. So the idea to say, I'm going to completely forget someone, that's really difficult to do when you don't control all the computers that actually have memory.
Right. In practice, that is. At the same time, there is a legal mechanism for getting rid of this stuff. Any copyright holder can go to archive.org and say, stop.
I'm not just talking about archive.org. I'm talking about personal users that do the same thing. I know there are people out there that like to archive. They get
hard drives. But they are still subject to copyright law.
True. But
so there is an out. It would be fairly litigious in the U.S. Luckily, the EU isn't quite as lawsuit happy. But there is a mechanism there.
If you write a comment on my blog, do you own the copyright on that indefinitely? And what if I have a user owned agreement that says any comments are my copyright?
Yeah, don't most things have understood agreements? I mean, when you do these things, you're always having to agree to something that, you could say this, we can just do whatever we want with it. Yeah. And even if you say you're going to be forgotten, well, you already signed this saying. I mean, can you go back on
those agreements? You're talking from the point of view of the U.S. In the EU, they've historically had much more stringent policies. Whenever I've been writing software, I've always been conscious of the extra requirements that have been put in place. Because of EU privacy laws. Like, for example, in a company I worked for that did basically nannyware, blocking websites for people at the workplace, you know, preventing people from looking at porn, fundamentally. Right. And
can you sleep at night? That's bad for you.
Actually, I can, but that's a whole long conversation. With regard to the data that we were keeping in there, logging the data to be able to,
To filter.
Yeah, to be able to also make a case to say this person was violating laws where they were making a obtrusive workplace for other people, that you have an audit trailer to say when they were doing it, this is when we gave our memo to say that, you know, stop doing that. And that data was all anonymized for the European customers, that the person who administered the service, all they ever saw was an IP address. All they ever saw was this ID number. and they
couldn't map it back to a user?
They could if you had a labor representative with a separate password log in, and then you got the actual data for that entry.
Right, to protect people from their privacy.
Right. So the things that we expect in the U.S. are not the case outside the U.S. It's funny because the U.S. companies would always be like, oh, that's an interesting feature. Yeah, we're never going to use it.
Thank you very much for that story, Miles. I really appreciate it.
But good to say, good to know, too, because, I mean, we had an email come in from some woman in France that wanted a T-shirt. So we are out there in the, you know,
we're international
show.
Yeah.
Floating through the ether.
Yep.
You know, GeekSpeak's doing actually really well on the numbers and everything. Hmm.
We are tremendous in Yugoslavia.
Population density is amazing for the English speakers.
Right. All five of them.
No, English
if you're,
is the
universal
language.
If you're using Facebook and you haven't joined the Facebook GeekSpeak Facebook page, go to geekspeak.org and there's a button on the left-hand side and go ahead and join up. You can see more of the feeds of content that we participate in throughout the week, like images and such that aren't so good for radio.
Join the whole 50 people that have done so far.
I think it's 52. Come on. Hi, Al.
Hey.
What's going on with the lime?
Well, I don't know. This is a little bit of a subversive story, but many of you out there are familiar with LimeWire. LimeWire is a peer-to-peer client that runs on the Nutella network. Essentially, what it allows you to do is the kind of thing you used to be able to do with Napster. Just connect to other servers and download free music at any point. And basically, it was like a search engine. You open up LimeWire, you type in, you know, Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and you get that song, like, within a minute. So you were literally getting all of this content, you know, illegally downloading and just using it to your own advantage. Well, obviously they've been under lawsuit after lawsuit. Finally, the end of October, LimeWire was shut down as an application. So what the interesting thing about LimeWire being shut down, though, is it gave a healthy boost to the rest of the file sharing community. LimeWire is not alone in this peer-to-peer type of an application. There's a lot of other programs. And as a matter of fact, there's a few that have reported giant surges as soon as LimeWire shut down, one of them being mp3rocket.com and another one being BearShare. Both of those are Windows clients. And then there's another one that's a Mac client called LittleShoot. And all of them kind of just all of a sudden LimeWire goes down, all these other ones come up. So it's still going on, but LimeWire is sort of a veteran, you know, of this whole era of the Napster kind of hotline kind of file sharing, peer-to-peer stuff. And to see it go down it's a little sad. It's a little bittersweet in a way.
Well, it's also curious because at the same time this week, there was a verdict handed down with regard to file sharing to a mother for Jamie Thomas.
I saw that.
And the fine was $1.5 million for 24 songs.
It was like 24 songs.
This is from like years ago.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's
original. It's been going through the courts for years.
And so it's been going up and down the amount. And $1.5 million, that means $62,500 per song as a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we do need to have a conversation. Yeah. Yes, LimeWire getting shut down, copyright violation, that makes sense. But at the same time, you wonder, like, how far is too far? How much is intrusive? How much is $62,500 too much? I think so.
It's more than I'd pay for an album. But, you know, I think they're trying to make an example of this woman. And they're not going to get very far. I mean, they're trying to – it's interesting to note, though, when you look at the people that they go after for this file sharing stuff, when you have a peer-to-peer client, there's two things you can do. You can get a file, and then you can offer one for free. Or you can offer the ability to download your files, and the people that get are the ones that are really getting nailed are the ones that are allowing their files to be downloaded by other people, not the people who are downloading. See, if you notice that woman, she's being charged with illegally sharing, not illegally downloading, illegally sharing her stuff.
But
it's an interesting.
But I wonder though, when you talk about,
of course, the system doesn't work unless people are doing that.
Yeah, you have to have some altruistic pirates.
Right, but you're talking about making an example of her. Mm-hmm. My thought process is if you have someone, you know, taking some spray paint and vandalizing a wall, is it all right to make an example of them and throw them in jail for 15 years?
Oh, no, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, it's ludicrous to think that they would do this to this woman. And I think even their lawyers are saying the same thing. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes
fine.
Out.
I can see but a fine. Time, I can see like an excessive fine to say like, okay, you have this album that – or a song. Let's say a song's 99 cents these days when you download it from you know, from any of the various sources. That the fine for that would be $99 per song. I mean, it's a, it's two orders of magnitude more than just buying the song.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, but think about parking meters. I mean, it costs you a dollar to park, but you get a $20 ticket. I mean,
right. And that's only a 20 to one. But I mean, like $99 for a 99 cent song would be like 100 to one. And that seems like even might be excessive, but that's even that seems kind of excessive. But okay, I guess I'd accept that. But $62,500?
That's crazy. And how do they get that number? I mean, like, what is it? Is it a square of something? Or, I mean, come on, that's crazy.
I'm just thinking of, like, in a board meeting, somebody just making up a number.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's actually what is going on. You have these judgments that are very high, then very low, then very high, then very low. In the same case, as they're going through the appeals process, how do you – it's obvious that people are kind of throwing out a number and seeing what sticks. Well,
also, it is a square of 250.
Oh, it is?
No, of course.
So they're maybe like, you know.
I thought that was something.
1,000 seems too much. Maybe we'll do 250. No, we really have to make an example, so let's square it, you know? And got 62,500.
Wow.
Well, that's funny. I love that Ben just did that in his head. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Don't argue with me, Ben.
I was thinking 250, that seems arbitrary. Why not 256? At least that has some.
Oh, then it, I relate to that better. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, wouldn't that be interesting if the fine were $65,536?
Why is that number important, Miles?
It's 16-bit. It's 2 to the 16th.
All right, thank you
very much. Come on, that's obvious.
Ben, what happened on Tuesday?
They could have done 2 to the 32nd, which is 65,536. Just a little bit more than what they were fining.
2 to the 32nd? No,
it's what Miles just said.
2 to the 16th.
16th, I'm sorry, yes.
2 to the 32nd is over $4 billion.
Don't argue with me, Miles.
It only works because I got the board in front of me, bud. See, okay. Watch. Go ahead, Ben. Your story? Best or worst proposal on a Tuesday? Here we go.
You had me turned down. Sorry.
I didn't have you turned down.
Ah, that's right. Okay, never mind. Okay, so.
We can never turn you down, Ben.
No.
Aww,
too pretty.
And shucks.
Definitely has a face for radio.
Come on. So, give us an update on
Tuesday. All right, let's move on. In Denver, on voting day, on Tuesday night, there was a proposal which was soundly defeated. Thank goodness. Anyone have any ideas what it might have been? It was to... it was a measure. I would call this a pseudoscientific proposition. It would have established a commission to track extraterrestrials. So they basically were saying, hey, give us money, voters, you know, vote to create this commission to track UFOs. Well, not UFOs, because UFOs, there are plenty of UFOs. They're unidentified flying objects, but extraterrestrials. And then allowed residents of Denver to post their observations on the city's website to report sightings.
Okay.
So this would be a boon for the conspiracy theorists. And just a sad day for everyone else.
It's true, though. We really need to keep track of these aliens. They're running all over the place.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true.
We need
that's
people
true.
To follow these aliens, even though they may be moving at light speed.
Al, your tin hat's falling a little bit to the right.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, push that back up. So anyway, the guy who proposed this this measure, Jeff Peckman, he said the government is tracking alien sightings but refuses to make the reports public, and we hear that all the time. And also, just to throw this out there, he's a meditation instructor, which is fine, but he's also a promoter of new technology, including something he says reduces the, quote, chaos of electromagnetic fields.
Interesting.
So that sounds a little bit like the...
So, I mean, this is an interesting premise. I can see where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. His thought is that the government's tracking stories of UFOs and aliens and things of that nature, and yet he can't find any documentation of that, and so he's inferring that
they're hiding
it. It's hiding. It's being hidden. And so this measure was to say, let's not hide it anymore. Something like that?
I assume so. I found only a relatively
small... But it didn't pass.
It didn't. No, it didn't.
So the government's still going to be able to
hide
this.
It was defeated pretty soundly, 5-1. Five out of six voters.
I think
the
prime ministry could handle this problem because it'd be pretty easy to
set up a database to track the zero.
Yeah, I'm sure that they exist.
Yeah. Can we also reiterate that if you say UFO, it's automatically not aliens? If you know that it's aliens,
say alien?
It's not unidentified.
Right. It's no longer
it's
UFO.
It's an alien flying object. Yep. If it's a UFO, it means you don't know what it is.
That would be a paradox. Everything is misnamed.
What are docs? I mean, I know what a pair of something is.
Well, it would be a dox. It's a whole paradox.
Actually, it's really interesting too. I was driving and I thought I saw an alien, and it was only because I had a really clear view of what was around that I saw that it was actually those lights that kind of, you know, they point up from the ground and they move around on the clouds and everything. But like out of the corner of my eye, you know, like the human brain really infers a lot.
I love this. You're a complete skeptic. Guy, and yet you said I saw an alien.
The first thing you thought was an alien. And then I thought, how probable is that?
Right,
it's probably something else. It might be the moon or a spacecraft. But it looks like a spacecraft.
Gas. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. A lot of swamp gas around here.
So I don't know. I guess I'm saying don't jump to conclusions.
Hey, GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 South Kill Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Anybody got a geek bit today?
I do.
Go ahead.
There's an iPhone app called iRadar that is free, and it I tried it out today. It's hooks to a thing you can buy. It's by Cobra. Hooks to a thing you can buy that's a radar detector and goes to your phone, which it's just inevitable that sooner or later somebody would do a radar detector with a phone and
good.
Do that.
Yeah.
But the thing for the free version is pretty neat because I just opened up the dashboard and then I actually put it on my speedometer as I was driving. And so I have my iPhone in front of my speedometer and it's telling me my speed and I measured it and the speed was accurate.
Pretty cool.
On my iPhone. And so you can tell your speed. You can also tap a little button. So if you see like a cop, you know, like a speed trap, you just tap the button and it marks it so that you're able to, it's basically you creating your own database of local speed traps.
Does it also tell other people where...
It doesn't look like it has a sharing ability in the free thing.
Yeah.
But if you have the actual unit, then it actually will mark all these for you. But it's useful as a free thing too, even without the extra unit. It's kind of neat, you know. It's
yeah, just, cool.
You know.
All right, thanks for that. What's it called?
It's called iRadar.
This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxel. In the air with me, Ben, Al, and Miles. We are all waiting to take your calls with questions and comments of technology. The person that's really waiting for that, of course, is Rick. And Rick's in the other room. You don't hear him on air because he's waiting to take your calls to say hello. You want to be on air? What about? And when he does that, he pipes it into us, and we get to talk to you on air.
So if you want to hear Rick's voice, you have to call in.
That's very true. Yeah. It's a mystery.
Exclusive.
He's got a beautiful voice, too.
Yes.
Podcast listeners, listen to the live stream just for that.
1-800-655-5877. 1-800-655-5877. Of course, that's a toll-free number anywhere. I think anywhere. Do you know, if you're in some strange place, try calling it and tell Rick that it worked, okay? 1-800-655-5877.
Not necessarily a strange place, just a place other than... California, yeah.
Right. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at anybody?
SantaCruzElectronics.com.
You're listening to KOSP, Central Coast Public Radio. Now, we had a lot of fun earlier in trying to remember who was who, but I think it is Miles' turn again. So, hi, how's it going?
Hi, how's it going?
What is Minecraft?
Minecraft is a game written in Java, actually. It's
oh, really?
Accessible through a web browser. And people have done very interesting things, like built a
Starship
Enterprise. Full-scale one-to-one representation of the Starship Enterprise.
And I think we covered that on GeekSpeak.
I think it was 1.34 to 1 or something.
Yeah.
Oh, it was slightly smaller?
Because the block size
In
Minecraft.
Some person out there with a fair amount of time on his hands has built a 16-bit CPU in Minecraft.
Whoa, really?
And the progress of it was being followed by some folks with some interest. And
wait, how do you represent a transistor with blocks?
This is why we have a link to the YouTube video going up on the website.
Okay,
so
good,
you can
good.
See how exactly it works.
All right.
But it's cool.
Although they did put some music to it, and you won't get the music if you go into Minecraft to check it out. But still.
Okay. So is it a functioning CPU?
Yes.
So what can you do with it? Do you use sheep or something in the game to represent the bits?
What can you do with any general purpose CPU?
If it can do the Turing list, it's a full computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do anything with it. But this is a physical representation of a CPU, right? So it's got...
Right, because CPUs are not physical.
Well, you don't understand. It's not like it's running code.
It's macroscopic.
It's running bits. It's running yes and no statements, which are what, sheep? Do you know?
Just watch the video.
That was so mysterious. I love it. Okay, we're going to go off air for 5 minutes while I watch the video. That was amazing.
Wow.
Miles.
How did you bend time like that?
Yeah, that was really... Yeah.
I've never been in a black hole like that.
On radio. Feels like it at least.
Man.
I thought it was the other way around.
Let me tell you, it feels even longer for our listeners.
Oh. No, that's when we're talking, Miles. Yeah. That's when we're talking. Al... What's going on with robots? Specifically, I'd like some talented ones.
Oh, yes. There is one. This Japanese fembot learns to sing by mimicking pop stars. Is there any way you can go to this link? And
sure. So, yeah, I'll take care of it.
That's terrifying.
I mean, it's weird. They have this this robot, and they, you know, in Japan, and it's got hair and everything. It looks like a person, and of course, it's a woman. And they have it in this group, and it's on stage. And there's a bunch of different videos of it, but it's basically dancing, and it's got like five like real dancers dancing around it, and this robot singing, and it's learned, it's used breath analysis software and mouth movement observations. Mm-hmm. They've taught the robot how to sing. It's they call it the DivaBot HRP-4, and it's got like a tilting head. It blinks. It opens its mouth. It does all these things.
Let's hear it. It's moving around right now in its robot suit.
This is like, what year would this music be?
Oh no, it's gonna pop.
Miles, sit down.
Stop dancing, everybody. All right, so it's kind of creepy.
It's the ultimate creepiness. This, I mean, we really should have had this on Halloween, but I mean, they're basically saying
more emotion,
and you see the interviews of these guys, and they're like, this is the future. This is what we were going to move towards. You know, all these guys in Japan saying, this is what we want to develop this. So
wait, let me get this straight. We're outsourcing our pop stars.
Yeah, we're just going to use robots now.
We're insourcing.
Yeah. Automating our thoughts.
Well, according to this, the humans can actually be backup dancers and stuff.
But that's good.
The humans are going to be there.
For now.
But the robots there, I mean, it seems like a little bit of a sort of Chuck E. Cheese on steroids to me. But,
Is the robot actually generating the sound? Like, is it a speech analysis?
Yeah, it's coming from the robot, and they're using this robot. They have a singer that the robot has, like, learned its movements from, and it tilts its head and does these things and tries to use emotion and all that kind of stuff. And this is a danger zone, if you ask me.
So I guess you don't need auto-tune for the robot, right?
The facial movements and everything and the head tilting and everything is mimicked automatically from the original singer. Mm-hmm. So it's really just a replication system. So you get the perfect singer, and then you can create replicas of them in every bar and have...
Right.
You know. So the question is, if you replaced Justin Bieber with this robot...
Would anyone notice?
Would anyone notice? And no. Would the quality improve?
I think this the thing that's scary about this, of course, is that they're coming for us. You can see that they're slowly moving into talk radio. Eventually, we'll be replaced, you guys.
It's actually
they seem to have skipped us.
It's using
now they're singing
what they call Vocaloid software to actually create the sounds within its own.
Miles, are
mechanism.
You scared about this happening?
Am I scared
are you scared
about
these Japanese fembot learning to sing? Or are you
welcome? No, the
them?
Fact that they're singing is not what scares me.
Leaving the rest unsaid. Thank you very much.
He welcomes our singing
I welcome our
I set that up for you, man.
All waiting for it. Oh well.
Fembot. Yeah. I think singing overloads.
I have to say, so I sit next to Al in the air room, and you cover so many crazy stories, and every time you cover a new story, you open up the browser window, and I look over, and I see some weird image of some robot. It freaks me out, and I'm like, oh my God, what is that? And then I have to wait until after Miles' story to hear about it, so I don't ever hear any of Miles' stories.
he's shocked at the visuals.
Well, Ben, now it's your turn to tell us all about... I mean, you have crazy stories, too. Like, for example, what's going on in the Supreme Court?
The Texas Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I think this is fantastic, personally. The Texas Supreme Court, in a recent document, cited the wisdom of none other than Spock from Star Trek in the actual document. It's pretty fantastic. So I just want to read a quick a quick quote, and it's pretty much, it's all hidden in a footnote, but it says, appropriately weighted principles guide our course. First, we recognize that the police power draws from the credo that, quote, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Or the one.
They cut that part out. Second, while this maxim rings utilitarian and Dickensian, not to mention Vulcan, it's cabined by blah, 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 blah. And you jump down to the footnote that they have, and they say, see Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and then they give a little plot summary and everything. It's just really fantastic that Spock is now a legal authority on the Texas Constitution.
That's excellent.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the only interesting thing of this story. I mean, it's just the whole story. So you can move on if you want.
All right, we'll move on. Thank you very much for the update on
a valuable Texas thing, value contribution to society.
I mean, oh, actually, no. I have to say one thing. Last night, I saw something that I never thought I would see, which is a Star Trek episode in theater form at the Barn Theater at UC Santa Cruz, and it was really fantastic.
I really was going in
thinking, like, is this going to be, how deadly theater is this going to be, you know?
And then you come
but
to,
it's,
you,
it was wonderful.
You live up in Berkeley, right?
Uh-huh.
And you come to Santa Cruz, everyone's wanted the show, and on a Friday night you come in, and you don't invite your geek squadron to go see a Star Trek live production.
I didn't really realize it was... I know, what is wrong?
That was at the Barn, right?
I didn't really realize what was going on.
I bet, like, it's still going on.
I knew about that.
It was just last night. 8 and 10 p.m. So if we can go back in time,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning on radio. Yeah,
yeah. No, I just wanted to.
I also found some money today. Ha ha. Ben,
Rick informs me
that there's no proof, no evidence today that during the hour of Geek Speak that the phones are working. So if you'd like to prove that they are, you're welcome to call 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. We don't need to take calls. You're welcome to not call. Got lots of content. In fact, we did get an email from Randolph, and he wanted to correct us from last week. We were talking about DSL speeds towards the end of the show. Miles wasn't here to kind of correct us, I'm sure. But we were talking about how it would take a long – it would sound like to this user it was taking like 5 hours to download a full HD content from Hulu or from someplace to watch it. I think it was Netflix. And we were talking about that the speed was not very good and everything. But he says, yeah, actually, that's right in line with – you know, not great DSL. If you're too far away from the colo, that's as fast as you can get. And a 5 hour time frame is accurate. Hmm. So I guess I've gotten cocky with the cable modem.
Yeah.
That's what I use. It's just really fast.
Yeah.
Miles, but it also means DSL or cable?
I have cable.
Yeah.
But it also goes to show that now as speeds are getting faster and faster, if it takes 5 hours to download a whole HD movie,
right,
then that means that if we get 10 times faster than that minimum, that you can stream an HD movie
right.
in real time.
You can stream two of them, three of them.
On the contrary, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah, if you go on
times the contrary,
faster,
contrary.
A two hour movie.
If you go
250
times faster, you could do. Sorry. All right. So anyway, thank you, Randolph, for that. You know, we get emails once in a while to correct us, and we actually really appreciate that. Anytime an expert takes the time to look at what we're talking about and go, you get to know what you're talking about, we'd much rather be corrected so we can inform everyone and be wiser for the experience rather than just to, toss us off to the side. So please do
inform
us.
And I'm so glad it happened when I wasn't here, because then it goes to show it's not just me who makes egregious mistakes on air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not. Anyway, we are taking calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. We have no one waiting, so please do call. We just covered the some court stuff, so let's continue on the court theme. And Miles, what's going on?
Google has sued the United States of America.
What?
End of story. We move on.
And because of that, we're going off air. What?
They have sued the U.S. Department of Interior. The reason being that the U.S. Department of Interior, in requisitioning some software, said we need some messaging software. Well, something that is common, a common requirement for any organization. You need to be able to get messages to and fro and different employees. Unfortunately, or at least from the point of view of Google, they were saying, yeah, you gave all of these requirements, and then this one requirement that's mixed in with all the others is, oh, and by the way, the solution must include Microsoft software.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
And it's kind of like, wait, what?
Was this amended to it, or was this the original proposal?
This is the original proposal. So the idea is, before, there was a big stink about no bid contracts. We heard about this many times over the past 10 years of these no bid contracts. And so they went, no, we're going to have bid contracts. and we're going to write it in such a way that the only contractor who could possibly fulfill that contract
would be Microsoft.
Would be Microsoft.
Hmm. Or, so, I mean, another contractor could fulfill it and just use Microsoft. Like subcontractor.
Yeah.
So Google has sued the Department of Interior and is pushing to have the requirements for a particular vendor taken away and just have a list of requirements for the software itself.
Right. And the reasons why you'd want to say a certain vendor has to do with current infrastructure and being compatible. They could rephrase that whole thing to say it needs to be compatible with our current machines. It needs, you know, you could rewrite that to be such that somebody else could potentially execute upon it. Though, if you've got a giant install base anywhere of Microsoft product, it's harder to go away from that.
On the contrary, they didn't say it wasn't even about compatibility with Microsoft.
They probably didn't phrase it that way.
It was saying the Department of Interior demanded the use of Microsoft's Business Productivity Online suite, which the federal government doesn't use yet.
Yeah, that's not a good requirement. Someone wasn't doing their due diligence on that one. Mm-hmm. Pay attention, lawyers. All right, we do have a call, but now it's not on. No. Okay, off-air call while we wait for Erica to come back and join us. JD from Santa Cruz calls and asks if we can talk about the lack of Flash support on the iPad, and is there an alternative for streaming media on the iPad?
Does Flash stream media? I thought it was just download, and then it would play back from the cache.
I think yes, the video is all streaming.
Progressive download and streaming is very close in the conceptual place.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So,
well,
there's always going to be some buffer.
Yeah,
and
so streaming does have progressive.
There's no possible way that you could go bufferless. There would just be something that would be very small. We might consider like a small buffer, like 8K.
And the truth is, but there's always going to be some. If I'm downloading something from you, that's you know, video content, or I'm streaming something from your video content, the only real difference has to do with my client and whether it's saving it or not.
Yeah.
So if I have a client that's listening to a stream and saving it, you know,
Well, with progressive download, you can download as fast as your internet connection allows, and if your internet connection goes out,
right, and streaming potentially would be
streaming. You just can't. You have to be connected. Well, anyway, that's I feel like that's
as far as the
everything has a buffer, and it's a question of how big that buffer is going to be.
Or rather, may I suggest that whether or not the buffer can grow. Streaming, the buffer is pretty much set within a range.
Right.
Progressive, it can get as big as...
If you're doing live streaming, there's no way to buffer in advance because it's live. Right.
So that was an off-air question, and we got off topic.
Are there streaming solutions for the iPad? Mm-hmm. That's a really good question.
HTML5, right? Just
no, because that's not...
Well, actually, in a related story...
That's why I was saying streaming versus...
So there's different protocols when we're talking about streaming. There's HTTP, which is when we use video through that, we're talking about as a progressive download, because technically there's nothing in there that says it's a stream. But there's also QuickTime Server, whatever that is, mm-hmm. that does, quote, what is it, RTS?
RTSP is real.
Real, right. So there's a few different technologies that then have a player that's associated with them. I'm pretty sure that Apple QuickTime Server, the output of that stream is not compatible with the iPad or iPhone. And I heard that at work recently, was kind of shocked by that. So, but Apple is streaming their content sometimes, so we know that it's possible.
But isn't it also dependent upon the codec and also how you mm-hmm. organize that document if you have everything where the frames are not referencing another point?
You know, it's funny, Miles, we've been doing this for like over 10 years explaining stuff on air. We both know a lot about protocols. We both know a lot about video. Well, I know a lot about video file formats and stuff. The reason why this isn't clear is because it's really complicated, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
It's hard to make this simple.
Flash doesn't play on the iPad.
That's true. But they're supposedly on Thursday, a new player. Did it happen?
But it wouldn't happen for that. There was a new player that instead of running Flash content on the device itself, you go through them and they convert the Flash video on their servers to HTML5 and then feed you that content.
So it's just a server.
So it's a server doing a bunch of transcoding.
But Adobe did, this is another sort of related thing, they offered an HTML5 to Flash video tool. And
vice versa.
Yes. So basically they are providing a tool that will shift gracefully from HTML5 to Flash when the video tag isn't supported. So they're trying to address this issue with CSS.
The reason why you're not seeing more content available on a HTML5 platform like the iPhone is because the server technology, the people that are developing the content, that are streaming the content, that are providing the content, aren't migrating that quickly to it because there's not a large enough install base. It's all one of these catch-22 kind of things, right? You know,
well, that and the tools have been made for those. Adobe's and formerly Macromedia's selling point wasn't the Flash player. It wasn't.
It was the developing tools.
It was the tools that really made the difference.
Right. But like right now, I mean, the reason YouTube's able to stream to the iPad is not because they figured out a way to provide Flash content. They're re-encoding their content to the format that works for the iPad. Not all sites are doing that. That's really the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the people producing the content. Right. Are they preparing it properly for your device or are they not?
Right, but in answer to your question about the protocol they're using, a lot of streaming video is actually using HTTP, and you can just throttle that,
throttle how fast the
data is being pumped out.
And really, like, an HTTP stream of video, if you will, and a progressive download of video are the same thing from the server side. It really has to do with the client that's capturing it. Isn't that true, Miles?
Yes, absolutely true.
Okay. Okay, we're probably going to get corrected on that.
No, there are exceptions. There are custom protocols that can do other things. Like one of the things that real video can do, real audio, is that they can, on demand, change the quality as it's going, and that's why they have their own protocol. But if you have a single video with a single quality, there's no reason why you need to have anything more complex than HTTP.
All right, thank you very much for that. Like, unless you're talking about security and things, you want to make it so that it's hard to save it. I mean, there's reasons to do it.
There is no technology out there that could not be saved.
Thank
I mean,
even
real video that has this proprietary protocol can be saved if you have the right software.
Right. I mean, heck, you could just, yeah. Anyway, we won't get into the details of that, but that's exactly true. All right. Erica from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak. No. Scott from Southern California, welcome to GeekSpeak. I'm not doing something right. Hello. Miles, do you feel proud and competent at this point?
Yes, I'm feeling quite cocky. I got the phones to work last the week before last.
Erica or Scott, you there? This is GeekSpeak?
No. Hi, this is Scott.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Oh, all right, I guess, depending on how you guys answer the questions I have for you.
Okay. What's the question?
Well, I have a couple questions. I have an older version of Norton Utilities, and it used to have a function with the disk doctor that you could actually boot your computer with the CD, and then it would go in and repair hard drive problems. I was wondering if you knew what the newer versions. The one I have is like for Windows 95 or something, or Windows 98. I don't know if the newer version does that or not. I was hoping you guys would know.
Can you tell us what your hard drive's doing?
Well, it just the old computer crashed. And I had that happen with another computer before, and I loaded the disk doctor in, and it actually went in and found some bad sectors, and it was able to repair it, and it actually brought the computer back to life for a short time. I have another question about my new computer real quick. For some reason, it flickers. Like when I turn on AOL, the welcome screen flickers, and when I hit the right button on the mouse, the menus flicker. And even if I shut down the software and reload it, it still flickers like crazy. Almost
okay,
like there's a button.
We've jumped into two different things. So to repair a hard drive, to actually find bad sectors and repair them and stuff, there's an amazing application. I think it's really good called SpinWrite. It's kind of it's a very small application. It runs in DOS. You download it. You install it on a CD or a floppy if you've got them. And then you reboot your machine off of that disk and have it check your hard drives. And it will go through sector by sector trying to write. And when it finds a bad sector, it moves the content over. Miles.
Right, but that's at the physical layer. I think the Norton Utilities from 95 were actually booting and reading the file system.
Right, and fixing
it
the partition table and such. Yeah, that's a separate thing. Yeah. So I just want to talk about SpinWrite real quick, which is a great application for fixing the media aspect of it, the actual physical level. That's a little under $100. It's kind of an expensive application. It's one of those things you want to go in.
But the computer has to be booting.
No.
Is that correct?
No, you actually you create this disk, a complete runnable disk, and you reboot off of that disk, and then you scan your system. And
that hard drive has to be
exactly
spinning.
Exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah. That's right. The hard drive does have to be spinning. So that has to do, what Miles was saying is, that has to do if your drive itself is having difficulty. If your file system, which is actually sitting on top, kind of the database of your data, if you will, if that's having problems, this won't necessarily fix that. It will only make sure that the disk's data is accessible. But let's say you wrote some stuff on there that says, I'm a broken hard drive. It's still going to say I'm a broken hard drive after you run this. So that has to do with the file system on top of the drive. And there's a lot out there. I don't have one off the top of the head that I recommend. Either you geeks have one? No. Okay. What about the second question had to do with a flickering screen?
Yeah, it's my new computer I bought, and when I load it up, when I go to, say, AOL, for instance, which, you know, I run Safari and other browsers, but when I use the AOL sometimes, not all the time, it's just happening right now, when I load it up, the welcome screen flickers, and any page I open up flickers like crazy. And sometimes even in Safari, when I do the right click on the mouse, the menu will start flickering. Safari itself doesn't flicker, but the pop-up, little menu on the right-hand click on the mouse will be flickering.
Yeah, I got nothing for that.
You could guess the simplest thing to check would be your screen frequency settings.
Is it just that one menu that's flickering now?
Because it could be a color that's just...
No, it's like any page I open up in AOL, the AOL...
it's just bad HTML probably in JavaScript. I mean, I would assume...
It almost is acting like there's a button pushed down on the keyboard or something.
Right, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's like flickering there. Yeah. It can be just bad code. I mean, the browser compatibility with AOL might not be the same. Like,
well, obviously it's going to be bad code. It's the question of where the bad code is.
I meant on the website. At work, we have access to an application called Data Rescue at UCSD. So you can try Data Rescue for Windows or Mac file system recovery kind of things, finding files that have been erased. Good luck on that, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Norton always had the really cool animations of, like, a little guy going out and, like, polishing the disc. Like, while it was doing it, the little guy came out and he, like, rubbed it or something. Remember that?
Yeah, sure. I just love that you remember stuff by design.
That's like, the stuff I remember about
cool.
These.
It was pretty.
Yeah, just a quick thing for listeners, though. You were talking about it fixing the sectors on the hard drive. Nothing can fix a hardware issue. It's simply marking them as being bad so you don't use them in the future.
It does more than that. It's awesome. So Spinrite, what it does is it reads over the sectors, then it reads again, then it reads again, then it reads again, and it averages its read area. And you can actually recover data that wasn't read the first time. Basically, the hard drive is going to give up sooner than the application.
Oh, that's data recovery, yeah.
Yeah. So what it does is then it moves that data to a sector that reads more reliably.
Right, but it can't repair
it. It doesn't
repair
fix the hard drive.
It, yeah.
In fact,
but it can
run
fix your data. You are right.
It fixes your data. It's pretty cool. It kind of recovers it. It's like looking really... It's like when you ask your mom to look in your room for something and she finds it. It's like that. Well, Erica, thanks for coming back from Santa Cruz. What's your question today?
Sure. Hi, thank you. I hope I can say this right so you can understand it. I have Cruz.io for internet, who I love. They're the best on the planet. But... I had 1.5 download speed, and I'm upgrading to a 3.0 download speed. Mm-hmm. But it's caught my internet has to be down for 5 working days to do that, and I'm just curious why everything usually seems so fast. I just don't understand why it takes that time.
I bet you anything that what it has to do with is Cruz.io gets their network through AT&T, and AT&T to do this through their vendor does a restriction on time. I bet you anything is that. It won't really be down like that, I assume. And we are running out of time.
Okay, no problem.
Give me an email directly, and we can talk to the owners of Cruz.io for you, okay?
Oh, okay.
All right, take care. Thanks for the call. Geeks Beyond KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Geeks Beyond KOSP is supported by... Well, Santa Cruz Electronics, which I just read, but it's here twice. But I really like them, too. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. Al, crazy USB of the week, sir.
Yeah. This is the USB robot owl. And basically what it is it's a little owl that plugs into your USB, and it tilts its head and blinks its eyes.
Who?
How?
Does it say
who? Who? You do have options, white, gray, brown, or pink.
But it doesn't say anything.
You know what? I just gave you options.
That's true.
It was white, gray, brown, or pink. It blinks, and it tilts its head slightly. So I really don't – I'm putting a link to this. Why would you get this? There's no purpose to it. You're wasting a USB port. It's just sitting there. It does nothing.
What if your mouse keeps on chewing on your keyboard and you want to keep it still?
And we're running out of time.
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence. Everything we talk about – on the show is up at geekspeak.org. Coming up next is Car Talk. Thanks for listening.